the convention will not lead to economic exclusion because all affected stakeholders are consulted. The PCOC sitting on the 9th of June 2015 was briefed the amendment to the convention, and then we'll also give us a green light to come to this select committee. Then we then, as the Department of Transport, request the select committee on economic and business development to approve the session to the convention. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I anticipated that you would also take us through the convention itself and just point out some of the highlights in the convention. Are you ready to do that for us, or do you want to rather deal with it by way of questions?
I think if we were to deal with those issues, no questions, Honorable Chair, that will assist us because the document is a bit, in fact, the presentation emanates from the document itself.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Honorable members, there we have the request. I have looked at the convention itself on an electronic version, and it was given to us sometime last week already. Can I ask for you to also help as to how you would want to propose us to proceed with it? While you're doing that, I would at the same time also invite you on the PowerPoint presentation that was made. Should you have any questions, you feel free to raise those now. Honorable Timonia.
Thank you, Chair. Just two questions from my side. The one is the convention was entered into in 1995 already. Am I correct? Consultations happened in 2012.
Consultation happened between 2005 and then it was ratified in 2012. It was first developed in 2005 and then it was then recognized in 2012.
Okay. Any specific reasons why did it take so long? Almost 10 years now, 9-10 years. Now, my second question, let me rather reserve that one. That's the one question.
Thanks, Honorable Timonia. The process that is followed, you for the conventions to be recognized, you need to have a certain number of countries agreeing on the convention. So it means between 2005 and 2012, they didn't have a quorum that would have enabled the convention to be recognized. So it took about 7 years for that process, and then when then all the countries, the required number of countries had been reached, then it was then recognized.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honorable Chair. If I am to add on what Mr. Matia is saying, you know, Chair, ordinarily, 7 years under normal circumstances, when you've got to ratify a trade convention, it actually is a short period of time. It can actually last indeed a period of 10 years maximum. I would attribute that to one. If a convention is promulgated at IMO level, IMO has got about 7 committees. But the one that deals with sub-issues is the Maritime Safety Committee. Now, that committee immediately gets to adopt a view looking at the convention and able to ascertain the intention of the legislature. It then disseminates the convention and local support on why countries should form part of this convention. Now, countries have got responsibility of taking the convention and they lobby their respective individual countries. And you must find that within a country, there are internal processes that have got to be attended to. It might take maybe a year or two. After that, they kind of then form a panel and take a decision to say, look, we've got nothing to lose. We're ratifying the convention. It's one convention you want to be part of. Now, in the process, you have got to then go back to IMO and say, this is the view of the country. We are deciding to assent to it. You might find that we have about, in the IMO, about 251 countries, plus minus. So practically, it's supposed to be very, very difficult. So what I'm trying to say is that 7 years, it's quite a reasonable period, because normally it can have between 10 and 30 years. Thanks.
I think, on the Mutagonia, what's also going to be important for us to know is the fact that there are a whole range of disputes insofar as the maritime industry is concerned. Who is responsible for what and in what waters? And that is something that also then leads to countries carefully interrogating any of the conventions to make sure that by them acceding to it, they are not binding themselves to many of the competitive areas within the maritime industry. To use but two examples, you would find that shipping vessels goes into the waters that is claimed by another country, and they fish there, and they do a whole range of things. That's one. The other is also some of what I would advisedly prefer to call some of the acts of brutality in terms of how sea animals are being caught and killed. And therefore, with the environment that exists at the moment, countries would want to make sure that if their intentions are good, that they do not sign onto a convention that may result in some of these atrocities continuing to happen. So there's careful interrogation of the convention itself. And I think in the presentation, it became apparent that for us as South Africa, there are essentially two elements of the convention. The one is the training and the preparedness of our people who are at sea, and to make sure that they are safe while they are. I know you want to follow up into Dr. Munia.
Yes, slide 3, you see, actually it is 2005, not 1995. But slide 3 makes reference to 1995.
I think what Honorable Chair was reflecting on is actually to over and above that there are geopolitical matters that come into play for the country, especially Asian countries, where committing on the any particular standard of training will compromise their efforts. So such issues will then delay the process by sufficient member states acceding to a particular convention, because they first need to look at what is in there for them as a country, so that they don't jeopardize their opportunities as a country. So that process of going forward and back might actually take long before you've got a number of countries that is required. Also, the countries will then first look at their capacity as a country to make sure that when they accede to a particular convention, they've got their education systems in place so that they can be able to train required people as well as the standard that is required by the IMO to be globally competitive. So that process takes a long time, and as a country, we don't have control over that. So we were then able to then shift our processes as a from 2012, where then the sufficient number of countries was in place.
I notice you, but let's just get this one.
Thanks, sir, to you. That's why I said, Chair, if we are to arrest the committee, if the document, the presentation, the document that was, what I'm trying to say is, the inception of this FTC template was actually cited in 1989. That is when the document was first presented at IMO. It was only adopted in 1995 as now a convention formally of the IMO. So it actually preceded 1995. It was actually in treaty 6 years prior when it was first introduced. Then it takes government to say for the IMO to say we are adopting this convention as a convention of the IMO. So the process was not actually initiated in 1995.
Honorable Father?
Actually, not so much on the convention itself. Just for information, I'd like to know, I see that there are 4,000 lives that were lost worldwide during this fishing operation. Do you have estimates or can you tell us how many South African fishermen died in that same period? And then I want to know I want to say the regulations in our fisheries at the moment, you know, like fishermen or the skipper's license, were those type of controls that we got in place. How does that compare with this international convention?
On the first question of how many South Africans that have actually been lost to the operation, we don't have the number, but we can be able to forward that information. We have to contact with SAMHSA as a responsible agency for such activities, and then we can put the exact number of how many South Africans have been affected by this condition. And Umpe will take the second one.
Chair, even on the first question, you will have difficulty ascertaining as to how many fishermen have been involved along the way, for the simple reason that, one, this has been an industry that was not a regulated one. Two, it involved a lot of risk associated with it. And thirdly, there has been a lot of concern around issues of health and safety of fishermen. Now, this industry, big as it is, you must find that fishermen from South Africa were actually exported by countries that do not originate from South Africa. Whether because they, when it comes to the issue of remuneration, they get to pay less money. So it had a lot to do with cheap labor when they identified fishermen from the South Africa. So you might have a situation where a fisherman would descend from South Africa, but it's based maybe in China or England. Now, that fisherman is taken, or a group of fishermen from South Africa, they are taken from elsewhere. Now, because there were no regulations giving guidance on the rules of engagement, now we would have South African fishermen longer around the countries, even leaving the country for plus minus 3 to 4 years, because there are no rules of engagement that we can identify. So the convention by and large, take the life of the fishermen to another. The second one, sir.
Oh, I think you answered them both. Are you okay, Honorable Father?
Yes.
Okay. But we would want to be convinced, you see. If you are saying 24,000 lives, I think what Honorable Father is saying, that we need to be able to say that through us acceding to this agreement, we are saving so many lives. The second point that you are bringing through, which we can quite clearly understand, is when you talk about the exploitation of some creatures that become fishermen. Now, there are Cape, also women involved in the fishing industry. And one would also need to look at how do you provide adequate protection to the owners, as well as provide or giving responsibility to the owners, as well as providing protection to the fishermen. But at the third level, then also ensure that we have a way in which we are able to regulate, because the risk that we as a country are going through at the moment is overfishing, particular fishing stock. And we would, as a committee, want to be careful that through sending to this, we are mitigating that risk as well. Let's have a third question, then you can deal with them both. Do we have another question?
I'm on this question.
Are you at peace?
Yeah.
He comes from the mining areas of the country. Let me raise my question. My question would be, if we look at this, would there be any punitive measures that could be applied against fishing vessels that ignores the convention? You have in your earlier comment mentioned some of the Asian countries, and our experiences from the Scandinavian countries is that there is simply just a status quo where the international regulations are ignored. Would we be able to deal with that, particularly when we also look at the expansion of our oceans through Operation Patis? That would be one question, the punitive measure. My second question would relate to our preparedness. Now, you alluded to that by saying that that is the reason for the delay. We would, as this committee, not want to proceed with legislation unless we are sure, or this is not legislation, with an accession to this convention, unless we are sure that within the industry we are ready as a nation to provide the required skills to the people affected.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. And to start with the last question, through South African Maritime Safety Authority, we've got the capacity, we've got the expertise to implement this convention. In fact, as we speak right now, South African Maritime Safety Authority is responsible for the safety and education and the qualification of any maritime related activity at sea. So as I indicated, I think towards the last slides of my presentation, through engagement with SAMHSA, SAMHSA is just waiting for us to finish this process so they can be able to implement, because they are ready from the capacity and experience point of view. So the committee can be rest assured that we are ready as a DOT program to implement this and also enforce. Secondly, the issue of whether are there any punitive measures if other countries are not compliant. First of all the acceding countries should be able to honor this convention and the requirements there. Secondly, if any vessel comes into our waters as a signatory to the convention, we will then have a jurisdiction and the capacity to request that particular vessel to have the minimum standard as been set by the IMO through this convention. So we have the legal arm through SAMHSA as well to make sure that we are able to not only comply as a country, but also to make sure that people that come into our waters are able to comply to comply with the requirements of this CCWS convention.
Just to add on what the materials are saying, when it comes to punitive rights is an issue. The ship will be attached and it can actually not be allowed to leave our water. Till such time that what is an issue has been addressed.
There is another question that talks about protection of women. It does not only apply on this convention. Through the Nation Shipping Act, which is the Bible of the maritime industry, the captain of the vessel, so in this instance, the keeper of this vessel, is responsible to make sure that anyone on board, either the boat or the vessel, is protected. So there are conventions that are making sure that all the seagoing personnel are protected when they are in operation at sea, not only on the FCCW, but generally as a critical of making sure that people at sea are being protected. That's the responsibility rests with the captain of the vessel.
Any further questions? Let me raise the one, which is a practical experience that we have had recently. When there was a shipyard, I think it had a lot of Indonesian fishermen on it. But the condition of the ship was such that even the punitive measure of confiscating it wouldn't mean much. And I think I read somewhere in the articles of this convention that where no action or the action taken against the owner of the vessel, when that is not going to be strong enough, the convention then also allows us to engage with that nation state who in the first place released that vessel to the ocean and held them accountable for that. Now, if that is the case, you have referred to the maritime, if I said correct, Merchant Shipping Act. We have not seen the Merchant Shipping Act. You are the buyers. You are dealing with the things in the Department of Transport. Would there be any need to amend any of the clauses in the Merchant Shipping Act so that we are, in terms of South African law, empowered to be able to implement this convention, or do we already have sufficient legislation to assert our authority as a nation state?
In fact, it's something I want to mention before you happen to get into it. That process is currently taking place. We have now the Merchant Shipping Amendment Bill. That seeks to align itself with the international standards and law. So that process is actually in place too.
Can you give us an idea how long that would take?
If there's anyone to commit on something, you know, but at times you might find that at a departmental level, our legal services, because what we do is that we tend to amend the relevant provisions of the bill, and then we take that to legal services. Then legal services will then, if there are areas of concern, get back to us to say, look, these are areas perhaps we still need to strengthen this bill. Or if they are satisfied, they will then take it to the National Department of Justice for satisfaction. For certification. And then from there it will then go to the trustees and cabinet. So I don't want to comment on something, but perhaps it should be implemented in the next 3 to 4 months.
We would want you to keep to that promise of 3 to 4 months. One of the first question that was raised by Honorable Mutimunye was, why is it taking so long? And we would want to see the process unfolding sooner rather than later. So our secretary will record it that you had promised to us that within 3 to 4 months the amendments would come. I know that sometimes we delay things here in Parliament as well in terms of how we process things. But with that said, we appreciate the presentation that you have made to us today. I would just want to test finally with the other members of the Select Committee if we can on that basis then present to the NCOP the memorandum for their attention. Thank you very much.
Do we need a second?
Here is a formal document. We will report to the NCOP that the Economic and Business Development Committee, Select Committee, on the International Convention on Standard Training, Certification and Watchkeeping for Fishing Vessels Personnel, number 1995, in terms of section 2312 of the Constitution, dated the 23rd of June 2015, that's today. The Select Committee on Economic and Business Development, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the International Convention on Standard Training, Certification and Watchkeeping for Fishing Vessels Personnel, referred to in terms of section 2312 of the Constitution, recommends that the House approve the said convention and the exploratory memorandum. Honourable Terry has proposed earlier that we accept as it is. Thank you very much. That said, to the colleagues from the...
Something you found out to ask, with some idea, mutual friends of the that maybe there might be some steps that you might have to get from Samsung. So if I might ask, is there a person that steps you can directly use it?
You liaise with the secretary of the committee, who is Ms. Chris Dinizu. And I also, with your permission, members, request that you share with us a list of the countries that has already agreed to the agreement. It will just help us to have some insight into that. Thank you very much. You can stay with us for the next 2 minutes. Then we just do some more formal business. Colleagues, we want to welcome back Grace. We welcomed Honourable Father back last week already in the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations. But to say to Grace also, welcome back. We have before us the minutes of the meeting that was held on the 9th of June, where we had a briefing by the National Youth Development Agency on dysfunctional program in alignment to government policies. The members that were present was Ntumunye, Ikhale, Lond, and Lauda. Honorable Lond is not here. Honorable Father, is Honorable Lond coming back?
Well,
I'm very
confident that he has to do the
thing,
so just
look
out for a while.
We're going to need him to help us with this. Okay. It's going to be 2 seconds. Let's look at the item one was the opening and welcome. Item two was a presentation that was made by the CEO of the NYDA. Item 3 was our deliberations, and then we resolved that the NYDA should submit its annual performance plan for 2015-16 and the 2014-15 financial report. The NYDA should also then secondly provide the committee with a report detailing its work in promises and achievement thereof. Fourthly, the NYDA should furnish the committee with the TWC turnaround report, and that finally it should provide the committee with the mitigation plans designed to address the service delivery risk. Then we adopted the minutes of the 26th of May. And we adjourned. Can we have a proposal, Honorable Mchimunya? You were the only one that were asked. Are you happy with the minutes?
That's all, Monsieur.
Thank you very much. We'll just hear from Honorable Lund when he is back with us. Members, our next meeting of this Select Committee, Grace, the meeting in the third term, right? It's only going to be in the third term. I want to use the opportunity to say thank you very much, thank you. Cooperated so well, even while I was nearly acting. It was wonderful to work with you on this. Also to use the opportunity to say that the committee, the other select committee that you sit on trade and international relations, will not meet tomorrow because an agreement has been reached that there will be a special plenary of the NCOP. So we would only meet in the third term as well. We may have to communicate with some of you just to assess your availability. I've been in conversations with the chairperson in NA about some oversight visits that they may be planning that may happen during a period of recess. There are also some very interesting events that the Department of Trade and Industry is arranging as the work goes on, even while we are in our constituencies and doing work and taking in our provinces, in the provincial week that we will be having. So don't be surprised when we communicate that with you. At the moment, we are negotiating with the entities that they intend doing the oversight on. Also to say, because we're not going to see you tomorrow, that there are the two polls, the one on liquor and the other one on gambling, and they are not related to each other at all. It's just that they're both ending in DTI. That we need to process as soon as we possibly can. So we are exploring the possibility then that when we bring people from the National Gambling Board, that we also, because National Gambling Board happens in the, National Gambling happens in the provinces, every province has a board. And the NA is saying that it's going to be important that when they do arrange hearings in the NA, that we also participate there, because then it will just make sense when we have the leadership of the National Gambling in province, the provincial gambling boards that we are part of. In our debate on transport, we noticed with deep concern the number of accidents that's been caused by drivers being under the influence. And therefore this whole thing of the liquor board is strongly lobbied by the Minister of Transport, but also by the Minister of Social Development, because of the social consequences of alcohol abuse in our society. So we also then looking at whether we cannot have one meeting with the NA because of the numbers of people that are involved in the liquor trade. I can just conclude by saying that I noticed this morning that the highest paid CEO in South Africa is the CEO of SA Group, which earns a meager 122 million rand per annum. And then interestingly, he is followed by the CEO that is selling cigarettes, British American Tobacco Company, BAT. And then the third one, very interestingly as well, is the one that sells insurance policies for those who die because of abuse of liquor and tobacco. That's Old Mutual. And this goes on. I'm raising this because I am trying to convince you, honorable members, of the great responsibility that rests upon us to look at how do we, in a responsible manner, regulate the behavior of our citizens insofar as the abuse of alcohol is concerned. On that note, thank you very much. We will only meet this committee again in the third term. I trust that you all have the third term programs. We did communicate with the National Empowerment Fund that was meant to make the presentation to us tomorrow. Lupeka communicated with them that it was unfortunately only yesterday that we had to cancel the meeting of tomorrow. If there are no further comments, questions, Honourable Father?
So that's saying we have no meeting tomorrow? No,
we have no committee meeting tomorrow.
Nothing
any of
that. I didn't ask the Honourable Lawn, but I'm not getting any response, unfortunately, James. So I don't know what to say to you.
Okay, we will. Can I have the Jefferson's second? I can. Yeah. So then, take Mr. Jefferson's second. Thank you very much, colleagues. All the best. You know what I was asking you that question?
You're not going to go here.
Are you from the department?
I thought maybe you are with the media monitoring group.
It was 4 million a month. 4 times 12. No. 6 million. Let me get to the point. I always get to the point.
I'm